Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
When I was younger and still living in the city, I moved apartments like other people would change clothes. It wasn't that I was getting evicted or anything, they were just these super cheap places. Always a few in classifieds or easy to bounce between if your lease was up or if you didn't like the neighborhood anymore. I didn't own too much either, bed, couch, TV, some clothes, so packing up and leaving wasn't really that big of a deal. That lifestyle kind of fit me. Everything about it made sense at the time. I liked being close to the action. I liked that I could walk to a bar, hit a movie, grab food, all without needing to plan really anything. The last place that I lived before it all went bad was on the east side, right off this long boulevard that cut through a bunch of old brick duplexes. My apartment was a little bigger than the one before it. The floors were warped, the heater ticked all night like it was full of rocks, but it was mine. I moved in just as summer was ending. I remember dragging my mattress up the stairs and being drenched in sweat by the time I got to the top. There was this weird smell in the hallway too, kind of like old carpet with rotting fruit, but I figured I'll get used to it. You always do. The unit across from mine had its blinds drawn and a door scuffed to hell. I didn't think too much of it, just another tenant, right? The guy who lived there looked like he worked construction or maybe bounced at one of the bars. Shaved head, wide shoulders, sunburnt neck. He had a woman too, but I didn't really see much of her in the beginning. I just heard her. Well, I heard both of them. The fights escalated slowly then all at once. First, it was raised voices, then crashes and thuds. I'd lie awake on my couch with the volume turned up just to drown it all out, but it always cut through. Him yelling like a man possessed, her begging like she was already half defeated. Sometimes I'd hear her out in the hallway, crying, late at night when I got back from the bar. Just her voice echoing off that brick night after night. The cops came twice. I called both times. They never stayed more than 10 minutes. One time I watched the peephole, saw the guy standing shirtless in the doorway, arms crossed, just nodding while one of the officers asked him a few questions. The second time they didn't even get past the front door. It was like they had this routine, get in, calm things down, leave before the paperwork would start to pile up. I actually started sleeping with earplugs, but they didn't help. You can't drown out somebody being hit, and you can't unhear that slap, that wet, awful sound, or the silence that always followed it. Then came the night that I remember being the worst. It had been quiet for 2 days straight, and I thought maybe, just maybe, she finally left him. I got home around 7, made some pasta, and sat down to eat in front of the TV. Around 8:30, it started up again, a scream that cut through everything. And it wasn't just fear, it was panic, full body panic. I muted the TV, already standing up. He was yelling and stomping around, then I heard something shatter. I heard her say, "Don't, please, don't do that again." And it sounded like somebody getting slammed into the wall, my wall. Didn't really think, I just acted. Grabbed my phone and called the police, again. I told them it's serious, that he actually might kill her this time. Somebody needed to come right now. They gave me the same answer as before. If nobody from that apartment called, their hands were tied unless I heard a weapon, whatever that meant. So I hung up and crossed the hall. No plan, just heat in my chest and a sick churn in my stomach. I knocked, no answer, just the muffled chaos inside. I pounded harder and the whole door rattled. This time it was ripped open and there he was. He looked taller in the doorway. He filled it even, shoulders so wide they cast a shadow far over me. His chest was bare, his stomach was heaving, and his face was soaked in sweat and wild-eyed with rage. His mouth was tight like he was chewing on broken glass. "What the fuck do you want?" he asked me. "Look, she's screaming, man," I said. "I already called the cops. Enough is enough." He stared at me. No blink, no twitch. and I realized just how close I was to him, only a few inches. I could smell the beer on his breath, the sweat soaking into his skin. "I'm not going to say it again," I told him. "Let her go." And that's when it happened. He didn't say a word to me, didn't shout, just grabbed the front of my shirt and yanked me so far forward that my feet left the ground. I slammed into the hallway wall. Pain exploded in my ribs. I tried to push him back to get some space, but the fist came down and caught me clean across the jaw. I saw white and dropped. He kept coming, though. I scrambled and crawled backwards down the hallway toward my own door. He landed a boot in my stomach. I coughed so hard that I thought my lungs were about to come up. He didn't stop either. Another punch caught me in the cheek. I hit the floor hard and rolled toward my door, everything spinning. Behind him, I just saw her, just a flash, standing in the doorway holding the frame, blood running from her nose. She screamed at me to run. Her voice was hollow, though, like somebody that's already halfway gone. I got my key in the lock, barely, yanked open the door, and staggered inside. He followed me, still swinging. I threw my weight against the door and managed to get it shut just long enough to drop the chain lock. He pounded on the other side, still yelling at me through the door. I slid down to the floor, panting, spilling blood onto my tile. I thought it was over then, but he didn't go away. I sat there with my back up against the door, shaking uncontrollably. My left eye was swollen shut, and I couldn't take a full breath without pain ripping through my ribs. My hands were sticky with blood, some his, mostly mine. Through the door, I could still hear him out there, pacing, breathing, whispering things that I couldn't quite make out. The door then jolted hard and I jumped up. Another slam. Then a pause. Then the wood cracking. I scrambled backward, trying to drag the coffee table across the entryway, but my arms wouldn't move right. I think it was dislocated. The chain lock snapped and the door buckled and groaned. Then it gave out completely. He stood there in the frame, calm now, breathing slowly. "Should have just minded your own fucking business," he said. I tried to stand and didn't make it. He crossed my room in two steps, grabbed me by the collar, and flung me toward the hallway. I hit the wall, shoulder first, and dropped. I tried to crawl, but he kicked the back of my head and I folded. Then came more punches, hard, deep ones to the ribs and back, like he was trying to reach through me. I think I blacked out for a second because when I opened up my eyes, I was in my bedroom. He dragged me there. I was on the mattress on my back, the bed lopsided from the force that he'd thrown me in with. My blood was already soaking into the sheets. He stood over me panting, then reached down, and this is the part that still sticks with me the most. Pulled the blanket up over me, tucked it around my sides, like a mother putting her kid to sleep. "Don't knock on my fucking door again," he said. "You don't call anyone. You don't even look at me or her." He turned around and started walking, then stopped in the doorway. "Oh, I'm taking this too," he added. I couldn't see it clearly, but I heard the clink, the hook near the front door, the spare key that I always left hanging there. He took it. "If I hear you say a word to anybody," he said, "I'll come in while you're sleeping and I'll slit your fucking throat." And then, just like that, he was gone. The door creaked closed behind him. I heard his boots retreat across the hallway, the quiet pull of his apartment door opening and then shutting. No lock, no final word, just that silence again. I laid in bed until morning and didn't sleep at all, didn't move. Just stared at the ceiling and listened to the pipes moan behind the wall. Every little creak sounded like another footstep. Every car door outside made my stomach twist. I kept thinking he was coming back, that he'd left something unfinished. I didn't go to work the next day, or the next day after that. I didn't call the cops, because again, what would I say? That I got beat up for playing hero? That I poked my nose where it didn't belong? They probably wouldn't even come out again. So a week later, I started looking for new places. It took me 2 full months, but I finally got out. Didn't even break the lease, just paid through the end and walked. I left half my furniture behind. I couldn't stand to look at the bed again. The mattress was still bloody. I didn't even have it in me to throw it out. Just let the landlord deal with it. Now I triple check my locks. I keep my blinds shut. I flinch when somebody knocks on the wall, even if it's just the pipes. I still don't even sleep right to this day. I'll wake up thinking he's back, standing at the foot of my bed, holding up that key. I never saw that woman again either. Sometimes or occasionally I'll think back to her, wonder if she ever got out, or if she's still in there, taking those punches and screaming behind those old, paper-thin walls. I've lived alone for most of my adult life, not by some great design or a tragedy, just by default. No kids, no ex-wife, not even a dog. I had a job that I didn't hate, enough friends to keep me from going completely nuts, and a few hobbies that would pass the time. The rest was just filler. If something needed done, I would do it eventually. Laundry, dishes, groceries, car maintenance. All of it existed on this weird clock of motivation that rarely lined up with logic. I kept the fridge mostly empty because I hated grocery stores. I hated cooking even more. Most nights I'd realize that I was hungry, hop in the car for a drive-through or a pickup order. I knew every greasy spoon and every takeout window within a 10-mile radius. The place that I lived in was this squat little rental, just off a frontage road behind a rundown strip mall. One bedroom, no yard to speak of, blinds that were always crooked. It was quiet enough, which is all I really cared about. Never had any trouble with the neighbors. Never had any real sense of community either. Most nights I'd get home late, kick off my boots, fire up Hulu or PlayStation, and ride the couch into the early hours. Sometimes I'd scroll through dating apps or online auctions just to kill some time. I didn't drink much, never saw the appeal, and I never touched drugs. I was just lazy in a way that felt like it ran in my blood. The only thing I really stayed on top of was work. I wasn't passionate about it or anything, but it kept the lights on, paid my rent. I was the kind of guy who just did it enough to keep moving forward, even if that meant barely. The house was cluttered, but not filthy. The car had its issues, but still ran. I didn't owe anybody anything, and nobody owed me. It was a very simple, low-stakes existence, and I'd gotten real comfortable living in that way. Until one of these nights, it came off the rails because I couldn't be bothered to cook dinner. That night, I got off work around 9. I was wiped. I hadn't eaten anything since noon, and the idea of boiling water or even making a sandwich felt like a whole ordeal. So I grabbed my keys, called in an order to this hole-in-the-wall Chinese place that I like, Paco Panda, out by the gas station. I picked something to stream while I waited. Some murder show, probably. I just remember my stomach twisting up at the thought of sesame chicken. It was only a short drive, maybe 10 minutes. The place was mostly empty when I walked in. I paid, grabbed my bag, and thanked the lady at the counter, and went back to my car. The food smelled amazing. I remember turning the heater on full blast, even though it was early fall. My idea of a food hack. I just wanted to get home, plant my ass on the couch, and eat straight from the cartons. I hit the first light coming out of the parking lot and came to a stop. Music was playing, Let's Go to War by the Murder Dolls, and everything was normal until I noticed movement off to my left. There was this old sun-bleached sedan pulling up beside me, engine rattling, windows down. I glanced over and saw four guys inside, early 20s maybe. At first, I thought they were trying to get my attention about something, maybe my lights were off or I dropped my wallet or something. I turned my music down and rolled my window halfway. What? I called out to them. The guy in the passenger seat leaned out and yelled at me. You look like you beat off to cartoons, bro. There was this beat where I really didn't react, and then it kind of clicked. They were just being dickheads. I don't know why, but I fired back something without thinking. Is that something you know a lot about? You like cartoon cum time? His face dropped, just for a second, but it was enough. Then the light turned green and I gunned it. I didn't expect them to follow me, but they did. They didn't tailgate me or try to run me off the road or anything crazy at first. They just stayed behind me, nice and steady. I took a few more turns trying to be sure they were. They matched every move. I pulled into this random grocery store lot and looped around to see if they break off, but they didn't. By the time I made it back to my neighborhood, my hands were sweating on the wheel. I considered circling the block maybe, trying to lose them, but I figured screw it. They'll get bored eventually, right? I pulled into my driveway and left the engine running. Their car rolled up right behind me and stopped in the street. Three of them got out. The driver stayed put. I didn't recognize any of them. One was tall and wiry, wearing this ski cap even though it wasn't cold out. Another had a hoodie with the strings tied around his face now. The third looked like he had prison muscle, just thick and mean. They didn't charge at my car or anything, they just spread out, slowly walking around me, looking in the windows and muttering something to each other. I stayed in the driver's seat, clutching the steering wheel like a lifeline. My phone was in my pocket, but I hadn't reached for it. I didn't want to draw any attention. "All right, come on out, tough guy," one of them said. "Yeah, keep talking that shit," said another, tapping on the glass with his knuckle. I still didn't move. One of them kicked the driver's side door, hard enough to rattle me, and dented it, of course. Then they all laughed. They stood in my yard for maybe 5 more minutes, pointing at stuff, my trash cans, the porch light, my car, just taking stock of what they could fuck with. I expected them to key my doors, to slash a tire, or maybe worse, but eventually, they got back in their car and took off without another word. I sat there for another 5 minutes before moving, just breathing, trying to calm down. Then I grabbed my food, went inside, and double-locked the door. It took me a while to eat, my hands were still shaking, but after a few bites and a few episodes of whatever was on Hulu, things started to settle. I actually started to feel a little stupid about it. Probably just bored kids looking for a thrill. Nothing too serious. By 10, I'd moved on to playing some kind of shooter online. The tension was gone, I was in my boxers, half a beer left on the coffee table, game controller in my hand, completely relaxed. That was at least until past midnight, and that's when I heard footsteps outside my house. Not distant ones, not from the sidewalk or the road. These were closer, on my driveway, slow, heavy crunches. I muted the TV and went to the front window, moving the curtain just enough to peek through. There it was, same shitty sedan, parked in the same exact spot, 3 figures moving up the path to my front door. And this time, they weren't joking around. Same guys, same car, same dead-eyed swagger, like they owned the night itself. One of them had something in his hand, I couldn't really tell what. Maybe a tire iron or a flashlight, but it caught the porch light weird and had this glint and shadow to it. I backed away from the window and locked the deadbolt, then the knob, then slid on the security chain across. My heart was thudding so loud it sounded like footsteps in my ears too. I didn't have a gun, never thought I needed one. I didn't even have mace. It was the kitchen full of dull knives and a vague sense of regret. One of the guys banged on the door, flat palm first and then with his fist. He barked at me to open up. "Come on, you tough shit. Come say what you said earlier." They pounded harder. The door was old, hollow core, rental grade garbage. It wouldn't last too long if they really wanted in. For a second, I couldn't move. I just stood there in the living room in my socks, lights still on, beer going warm. My mouth was dry as chalk. I thought about calling the cops, but what would I say? 3 guys are outside being scary? I hung out with these rough kids growing up, and I knew how that would go. They'd be gone before a cruiser even showed up, if one even showed up. I turned off the lights. In the dark, the panic sharpened. It made everything feel thinner and more fragile. I could hear them talking out there, louder now. One of them was trying the doorknob. Another stomped on the steps like a child throwing a fit. Then it went quiet. I crept inside the back bedroom. My closet door was open, and inside was something I haven't touched in years, this cheap-ass katana that I bought at the state fair back in high school. It wasn't sharpened, just some steel replica meant to sit on a stand, but it was heavy, long, and intimidating enough in the right lighting. I grabbed it, then opened up a plastic bin where I kept this old Halloween junk, pulled out the mask that I wore a few years ago, this rubber demon face with warped horns and sharp teeth. It stank of dust and plastic, but I shoved it on and made for the back door. I slipped outside, moving along the side of the house, keeping low. The grass under my feet was wet. My heart was still slamming in my chest. I inched forward until I could see the 3 of them again, still near the porch, looking pissed and confused. 30 more seconds, dumbass, one of them called out. Then we break your fucking windows. I didn't give myself any time to think or think twice. I charged. I came around the side of the house full speed, barefoot and wild, swinging the katana over my head like a lunatic. I didn't yell anything coherent, just a howl and this high and raw that ripped out of my chest. They all turned at once. I don't know what they thought they saw. A masked freak with a sword, barefoot and snarling, but it was enough. One of them screamed. The big one tripped over his own feet trying to run backwards, and they all scrambled back to their car, door slamming, tires screeching as they peeled off into the dark. I stood there in the yard until the engine noise faded, and that was the last time I ever saw them. After that, I started locking the doors earlier, got a motion light installed, even went and bought a real baseball bat, not for show. I still eat that Chinese takeout, I still live alone, still waste far too much time on the couch, but I don't really mouth off the strangers anymore. It was the spring of 1996. I was a 15-year-old American girl living in Pakistan with my grandparents. My family had been going through some difficult times back home in the US, and my mother, wanting to shield me from the turmoil, decided it would be best for me to live abroad for a while. What started as this temporary arrangement turned into something a lot more permanent by choice. I'd been in Pakistan since the age of 11, and over time, it truly began to feel like home. I embraced the culture, learned the language, and built strong relationships with my family and friends. Despite having the option to return to the US after every visit, I always chose to stay. Pakistan just became my second home. Our household was always full. My grandparents, my aunt and uncle, their three children, the neighbors, and of course, frequent visitors. We had this open door policy, both literally and figuratively. It was the kind of neighborhood where people rarely locked their doors during the day. It felt safe, secure, or at least so we thought. Inside households like ours, it's common to hire domestic help, cooks, cleaners, and general helpers. While my family opted for female help, especially when daughters were in the house, some would prefer young male workers who were seen as stronger and more agile. My grandparents hired this male helper, Bashir, who had his own quarters outside the house. Despite his presence being normalized in our culture, I always felt this deep unease around him. Maybe it was instinctual or maybe just caution, but I got into this habit of locking any room that I was in when I was home, alone or not, just in case. Being in Pakistan is different. My grandparents were wealthy, but new danger could lie around any corner, especially for a young girl like myself. And on one particular day in spring, everything changed. That afternoon, I was relaxing in my aunt and uncle's bedroom watching TV. It was my favorite spot when they weren't home because they had this private television, unlike the shared one inside the family lounge downstairs. Now, I had no idea at the time, but I was alone in the house for the first time since moving to Pakistan. My grandfather was at work, my aunt and uncle had taken the kids to another town, and my grandmother had just left for an errand with our driver. Then came a knock, loud, repetitive, and urgent. I paused the TV and placed my ear against the door. It was Bashir. He was calling my name in a hurried, anxious tone, asking me to open up. When I asked what he needed, he claimed he had something to give to me. I refused, and he quickly shifted, saying he needed to ask me something. So I told him to ask me through the door. But he didn't respond with words. Instead, he began turning the knob and pushing against the door frame a lot more forcefully. My heart started pounding and reality sank in. I was alone with him. Panic set in, but so did instinct. I looked around for options. The phone in the bedroom was useless without the phone directory, which was downstairs near my grandparents' room. I didn't have any phone numbers memorized. I looked out the front window, hoping to spot somebody nearby, maybe the neighbor or the friend who lived across the street, but no such luck. Meanwhile, Bashir was still trying to get in. I thought about hiding in the closet, but it had no lock. I made a quick decision and ran to the attached bathroom. It had two locks. I secured both and climbed up to the small window high up on the wall, hoping to get somebody's attention. Once up there, I could see the neighboring house very clearly and tried yelling to get the helpers outside, but just as I was about to scream louder, I heard a familiar voice. It was my grandmother. She was calling my name from the hallway. I waited for confirmation, though, and when I finally heard her voice again, I carefully opened up the bathroom door and then the bedroom door to find my grandmother standing alone and breathless. She immediately apologized, saying she just realized that I was home alone by myself and had now rushed back. She and I both knew what a dangerous mistake it had been to leave me alone that day. I never ended up telling her what Bashir had done. I don't know if she saw him retreat from the door or noticed something was off, but I kept it to myself. The whole ordeal lasted no more than 20 minutes, but it was the most terrifying 20 minutes of my life. Feeling trapped, helpless, and vulnerable inside your own home was just a brutal awakening. Years later, in the mid-2000s, I returned to Pakistan for a visit with my mom. By then, I was back in the US full-time. One afternoon while visiting my grandparents, my mom and aunts started to tease me about this quote-unquote surprise visitor who had come all the way from another village just to see me. They were laughing and nudging each other as they told me to come into the living room. I walked in and there he was, Bashir. My heart sank. He looked unwell. His eyes were bloodshot, and he had that dazed look of somebody who hadn't slept in days. He stared at me with this strange intensity. I kept my face calm and greeted him politely and said, "I'd heard he got married. Congratulations." He nodded silently. I quickly excused myself and went to my room. That was the last time I saw him. Even after all those years, seeing him brought everything flooding back to me. The fear, the panic, the knowledge that something horrible could indeed have happened that day. Now, I'll never know what his true intentions were, but my gut tells me that I narrowly escaped something awful. What he didn't know was that I wasn't some naive, easily fooled girl. I was a fighter. I'd grown up with two older brothers and had been learning karate since I was six. My instructor actually used to call me Little Tiger, and if he would have managed to break through those doors, he would have met the tiger inside me. That day shaped me. It taught me about instincts, strength, and survival. And I've carried all that silently with me for years, but today, I finally speak it out loud. Thanks for listening. In 1995, I was 11 years old and living in a small town in the Southwest. One of those places that still really felt untouched by the worst part of the world. Both my parents worked full-time, so I was what you'd call that latchkey kid. I didn't mind. We weren't rich, but we had a decent little house with a garage, a backyard, and neighbors who mostly kept to themselves. My parents trusted me to stay out of trouble, and for the most part, I usually did. I was actually pretty good at being alone. Most days after school, I'd ride my bike around until I was tired. We didn't have cell phones or constant surveillance back then, just streetlights and instinct. I had good instinct too, even as a kid. I knew which dogs barked, which fences to avoid, which roads had the rough pavement that could throw you off if you hit it too fast. I knew where those weirdos would live. I knew how to disappear if something didn't feel right either. Back then, that town really didn't feel dangerous. Not really. It was that stereotypical place where people left their front door unlocked, waved to each other from the driveway. We had block parties, fireworks shows, and old men who mowed each other's lawns just to be helpful. My parents weren't careless, they were just busy. They worked super long hours and came home tired. And I understood that, and I never held it against them. I knew how to make my own snacks and lock the door when it got dark. I stayed inside when I was supposed to. I answered the phone when it rang. Nothing had ever gone wrong, until that one night. Now, I'd seen Freddy around plenty of times before. He lived four houses down, worked as some kind of mechanic, had a carport full of broken down junkers and greasy tools. He was quiet but friendly, hey there kiddo, kind of guy. Sometimes he brought over bags of oranges or helped my dad fix the mower. His kid lived with their mom in another town, and when they visited, I heard them laughing in his yard. He never gave me any kind of reason to be afraid of him. That day was long and hot, one of those dry, stretching Saturdays that seemed to go on and on. Both my parents had picked up shifts, my mom at the hospital, my dad at the garage. I had that whole day to myself with no homework to worry about, so I did what I always did. I grabbed my bike, filled up my water bottle, and rode on. I circled the neighborhood over and over, past those same hedges and driveways and cul-de-sacs, letting my legs go on this autopilot mode, where I made up stories in my head. I pretend I was a detective tailing some kind of fugitive, a courier with a secret message. I stopped once for soda at the gas station and once more to sit on the curb outside the park and just eat this melted granola bar. Around 6, the sun was dipping lower. The shadows started to stretch across the sidewalks. Time to head home. I coasted back toward our house, turning onto our street just as Freddy was pulling into his driveway. I waved and he waved back. I could see a beer in his hand already. and his truck sounded like it was on its last leg. I didn't think much of it in the moment. I was already picturing microwave popcorn and good reruns of Are You Afraid of the Dark? "Hey there, kiddo," he called out, leaning against the hood of his truck as I pedaled past. "Been out all day, huh?" "Yeah," I said, hopping off and walking my bike up the driveway. "And tall, too," he added. "Almost didn't even recognize you from behind." Now that stopped me. I turned, polite but cautious. He was still smiling, but his eyes looked glassy. "You're filling out those jeans real nice," he said. And that is when my stomach twisted. I didn't know what to say or how to respond to that. I'm not used to adults talking like that. Not to me or not around me. I muttered something like, "I should go," then started wheeling my bike toward the garage. "Ah, come on, don't be like that," he said, stepping off the curb and wandering closer. "I was just saying, you're real pretty now. You ever need anything, just come by. I mean it." I kept walking. "You know, my kids don't visit me too much," he went on. "Maybe you and me could hang out sometime, talk, watch movies or something. I got cable, a lot of good stuff on." I tried not to cry, but my hands were shaking on the handlebars. I turned back towards the garage and hit the button on the wall. The motor groaned and the door started to lower. Behind me, I heard fast footsteps, then metal scraping, then the slam of the garage door reversing and shooting back up on its track. "Hey, don't be rude now," Freddy barked at me. He had stormed inside the garage. I dropped my bike and ran. The side door to the house was cracked. I shoved through and nearly fell onto the tile. I didn't look back. I didn't want to see how close he was. I just knew he was behind me. I screamed as loud as I could, hoping somebody, anybody, might hear me. I made it down the hall, past the kitchen and past the living room, turned left into the hallway that led into the bedrooms. All the lights were off. The whole house was dim and shadowed. I didn't stop for a weapon, not even really to think. I yanked open the closet near the hallway bathroom and crawled inside, slamming the door behind me, pressing my back up against the shelves of towels. I sat there in the dark holding my breath, clenching my fists so tightly that my nails were now biting into my palms. I heard the front door creak open. Heavy, slow footsteps followed, breathing and low, angry muttering. "Where'd you go?" he said, his voice sing-song and cheerful. "You in here, sweetheart? Come on now, don't be a brat." The footsteps then circled the living room, then moved to the kitchen. Cabinet doors opened and something crashed. I bit the inside of my cheek to keep from sobbing. He moved toward the hallway. The floor creaked just outside the closet door. He passed it. I heard him enter my parents' bedroom, drawers opening, the bed shifting under his weight. He was still mumbling to himself, something about girls always teasing and always running. I stayed frozen, heart hammering, ears straining. When I finally heard the door to the room close again, I waited, counted to 60, then another 60. I slowly eased the closet door open. The hallway was empty. I didn't walk, I ran. Up the stairs, skipping steps and nearly tripping in the dark. The old wood creaked under my weight, and every sound that I made felt like a flare going up, loud, obvious, and begging him to find me. At the top, I ducked into the bathroom, slammed the door, and twisted that tiny lock until it clicked. I backed away, holding my breath. Below me, I could still hear him, his voice echoing faintly through the vents, still in my parents' room talking to himself. I knew I couldn't stay here. The door was flimsy. The lock was not meant for anything worse than a sibling trying to get in during an emergency. My only chance was the window. I climbed onto the toilet, nudged the screen out with my elbow, and eased the window up inch by inch. The cool night air hit my face. I could see the roof of the garage, flat, with this big silver AC unit near the center, just a few feet out. I didn't think, I just climbed. My bare knees scraped the shingles. I crawled low and fast, ducking behind the AC unit. My back pressed up against the metal casing, still warm from the prior sun. My breath was coming in quick, and I couldn't really control it. Inside the house, I heard something else slam. He was still in there, still looking. So I stayed right there, curled up behind the unit, not even peeking. The garage roof felt like this tiny island. I had no way down, no way to get help. Just a small pocket of safety where I could wait and pray that he wouldn't think to check above. The stars slowly came out, one by one. I saw the neighbor's porch light flicker on. Somewhere off down the street, a car pulled into its driveway and a door slammed shut. All the normal sounds of my neighborhood. So familiar, so harmless. But I stayed there. And at some point, I think I fell asleep, maybe even for a minute, but it was long enough. I woke up to the sound of my name. My mom's voice, my dad's too, calling out from the front yard. I sat up fast and scraped my palms on the shingles, but I didn't care. I peeked over the edge and saw their car in the driveway. The headlights was off, but the interior light was glowing as the doors hung open. I shouted for my mom. They ran toward me, panic on their faces. I pointed to the window and waved both arms. They told me to stay put, then disappeared off into the house. I waited there again, frozen behind the AC unit, until I heard them calling me from inside.
Extra Value Meals are back. That means 10 tender juicy McNuggets and medium fries and a drink are just $8. Only at McDonald's.
For a limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
My mom appeared at the window. Her face was pale. Voice was shaking. "It's okay," she said. "What happened?" I crawled in through the window and collapsed into her arms. And I cried. I told him everything, all of it, in fits and sobs. My dad listened without saying a word. My mom held my face and told me that it was okay, that I was safe, that I was brave, and that I did the right thing. I never saw Freddy again. He didn't come by the house, didn't lean on the fence, didn't wave from his driveway. He was just gone, like he never even existed. I asked my parents once, months later, what happened. And my mom just told me that we handled it. That's all I got, and honestly, I think it's all I needed.